who couldn't do that job. All he did was sign a lot of forms, customarily after Monroe read them. Without a nice, grisly war to occupy them, or missions from their king, the brothers had headed south to Louisiana looking for a change of pace. During an accession, something was always happening near a lower hotspot like New Orleans, such as a meeting with Nix. Plus, Will had burned through all the available nymphs in the north, since he never slept with the same female twice, usually by mutual agreement. A big rig driver pulled abreast of the Bentley and blasted his horn so loud the car vibrated.
"Mortals," Nix sighed. "So, what did you want to talk to me about, Ulayam?"
He frowned at the slaughtered pronunciation of his first name, but thought he caught a twinkle in her eye.
"Just call me McGreeve. As for the meeting, you rang me, remember? I assumed you wanted to talk about Monroe."
No.
Awkward silence. "Well, as long as he had a soothsayer here..."
"Mayhap you want to give me the goods on where to find his mate."
One of Alike's most compelling drives was to find his fated one, and Nix had helped three members of the clan locate and win theirs, against all odds, during this accession alone.
"You ask about his before your own?"
"Monroe craves his."
He needed that female in order to get the bairns he was keen to have. He longed for offspring more than a mother hen did. Already his brother was fostering two Lyke lads in their house. Yet Monroe had best be careful what he wished for. An old oracle had once predicted he'd be cursed with a harridan for his mate.
"And you don't crave yours? Spill to Nixie. I won't tell anyone anything. This night is our little secret."
As if those words weren't disturbing enough to Will, Nix's bat chose that moment to climb down her front, unfurling its wings to span her collarbones, its wee talons embedded in her shirt.
"That's complicated."
He'd once thought he'd possessed his mate.
"What a bloody fool you were."
"Don't make me turn this car around, Wolf."
He raised a brow.
"Very well. I've envied other males who found theirs. But I'm not in a good place right now."
He pulled on his collar. Understatement.
"Aye then, I'm McGreeve, and this is my Lyke beast. Get used to him, because you'll be seeing a lot of him."
Even so, he couldn't stop himself from asking,
"Have you foreseen mine then?"
"Oh, here's my exit."
With expert precision, Nix cut across the second lane of traffic to an off-ramp. They turned, still in reverse, onto a smaller country road. Before he could repeat his question, Nix asked,
"So, what are you going to wear to the apocalypse? I'm thinking something sparkly and transfixing."
"Apocalypse?"
"We all must band together, enemies and allies, gods and men, or they will win."
"And who would they be, Valkyrie?"
"The Morior, bringers of doom. By the time I even foresee them, it's already too late."
Ominous words.
"You can't drop a line like that without unpacking it."
"Just did, you lame."
"It's McGreeve."
"Where?"
she gasped, jerking a glance toward the side of the road. She swerved sharply before righting the car. They collected another horn honk.
"Nix, answer me."
She faced him again, waving that away.
"Let's just put it this way. Smoke 'em if you got 'em."
Will tried to muster the appropriate apocalyptic concern. But if you'd lived as long and as badly as he had, impending end-of-world scenarios lost their bite. Nix's expression perked up.
"Here's our turn."
He finally twisted in his seat to glance over his shoulder. It was a dirt road overgrown with banana trees and kudzu. As they wound deeper into a gloomy, fog-laden swamp, Will again felt sorry for this Bentley. After bottoming out, backward for a fourth time, Nix pulled into a small clearing and parked.
Oh, we ended up being early.
For what?
Did she want to show him something out here? Where are we?
Our destination. Consider it a waypoint.
Why? Am I going somewhere else?
He asked, the hair on the back of his neck rising. Was there a threat? He scented nothing, and his instinct remained quiet. But then these days it was usually quiet. In any case, Nix would have foreseen any trouble, and she'd specifically driven to this place. She turned to face him, giving him the full view of her crazy. The bat's placement on her T-shirt made it seem like Bertil had been captioned sexually liberated uninhibited tart. Nix was so lovely and so damaged.
Let's talk a sec, just you and me. Relax, don't you trust me?
She asked in a playful tone.
Face it, Valkyrie. There are few in the lore that I trust, and you're one of them.
She was a tested and true ally of the clan.
How sweet, Alumium.
Macreeve, Nix.
Just because she was trusted didn't mean she couldn't be a pain in the arse.
Could you call me Macreeve, or Wolf, or Prick, or anything but my given name? Now, back to my mate. When will I find her?
Before Monroe finds his.
That tells me nothing. Are we talking decades? Centuries?
How boorish of me, divulging all while you're divulging nothing.
She leaned in closer to him.
Look into my eyes. Let me see your history.
History? Not just foresight? I do not know about this.
Ruel did a number on you, she said softly, but I already knew that.
He jerked his head back.
And what have you heard, then?
Whisperings of his shameful time with the succubus had passed among the older Lycae of the clan. Had other factions learned of that?
Not heard, Wolf. Seen.
He swallowed. Could Nix see that he'd wiped out most of his family by succumbing to that parasite? Could this Valkyrie see that Ruel still seemed to control his mind and body even from beyond the grave? When he had been not yet double digits in age, that bitch had gotten her claws into him.
And I borne them in one way or another ever since.
She'd ruined the boy he'd been and perverted the man he would become. Nix gazed at him with pity, and he knew she could see.
Gods, he despised the pitying looks.
Had received them all his miserable life. Was he truly so pitiable?
Just because I hate myself and have no control of my beast?
Yes, Wolf, I see all. And by all, I mean some.
Sweat dotted his upper lip.
What is it the nymphs say about you? I remember. You're all good and fucked up, dark and twisted. But they don't know why.
They called him Bucket List, one to do before they died, because they knew they wouldn't be getting vanilla. He had nothing to give but dark and twisted. Suddenly, he had difficulty catching his breath, as if a weight pressed on his chest. As if Ruel pressed on his chest. He wanted away from the soothsayer, from this car, this swamp, this bloody state. His earlier nonchalance had vanished. Mayhap it was time to return to the north.
And then, as if Ruel wasn't bad enough, Nix said sadly. You had to endure Dr. Dixon's tortures.
Will froze. He didn't know this person.
Never heard of a Dr. Dixon.
The psychotic mortal scientist? From the Order's Island Prison?
At his confounded look, she said,
"Surely you must remember all those experiments she performed on you when you were captured by humans. Electrocutions, beatings, weapons testing, vivisection. How could you forget when she cracked open your chest with a rib separator and sliced out your still-beating heart? She beamed proudly as she showed it to you. Of course, she was only following Webb's orders, but she did seem to take a sick interest in you."
The hair on the back of his neck stood up.
"Nix, these things have not happened to me. I've never met this Dixon woman, or anyone named Webb."
The Valkyrie looked puzzled.
"You don't remember being blasted with electricity, then trapped like an animal for weeks? After the prison overthrow, when everything was pandemonium and death, you organized the Virtas Shifters, saving them from wholesale slaughter. That's one of the reasons a wise woman dispatched you there."
"You are unnerving the hell out of me, Valkyrie."
"Oh,"
she frowned, petting her bat fitfully.
"I must have misread the future for the past."
She shrugged.
"It happens."
"The future?" He swallowed. "You're saying those things are going to happen to me?"
"Yes, Wolf."
Nix's face abruptly went cold.
"And all because you were betrayed by a soothsayer."
Spotlights blazed around the car, temporarily blinding him. They were suddenly surrounded by mortals with weapons.
"How? I scented nothing. What the bloody hell is this, Nix?"
"You need to re-break that bone."
She casually gestured at all of him.
"It didn't set right."
3. Time to call out some crazy. Not long after the end of the game, Chloe was back at home in the McMansion she shared with her dad outside of Seattle proper. Hoping to catch him before he went on the road again, she'd cut out early from the team celebration. Their next rain practice wasn't for months. What was she going to do without her teammates for that long? Oh yeah, figure out what was happening to her, heal up, and hopefully try out for the Olympics. After showering and securing her ankle in a well-used air cast, she limped from her room, meandering around an array of athletic gear. A snowboard, a basketball, a softball bat, all tokens of sports that could never sway her devotion to soccer. On the landing, she passed the wall of framed jerseys that her dad had proudly hung, then hopped down the stairs. Inside his study, one banker's light was on. The rest of the room was dark. He was stuffing files from a cabinet into his go-bag.
"Heading out of town?"
she asked as she dropped into a seat. His travel schedule was one of the reasons she still lived at home at the age of 24. They got along great, and there was a lot of house between them. Besides, it wasn't like she dated or anything. Dad nodded.
"I'm 30 minutes late."
"For another capture?"
she thought. She gazed away from him, surveying the study's ego wall, covered with her high school and college diplomas and his many commendations.
"Do you have any explanation for what happened out there tonight, Chloe?"
She turned back to him.
"How to put this? Either you're nuts, or I am," she thought.
At least her weirdness could possibly be explained. She figured that since her super-senses ability was physical, there must be a physiological reason behind it. Maybe she had a brain tumor that was heightening everything, like in that Travolta movie. Her mom had died of cancer just after Chloe was born. Wasn't the big C genetic? Her dad must believe so. He'd insisted that Chloe have her blood tested routinely. From the few pictures she'd seen of her mom, she knew she favored Fiori Todd's looks. What were the odds that Chloe had inherited more than Fiori's tawny hair and strange hazel eyes?
"Talk to me, Chloe."
Though Dad never looked his age, was fitter than most 30-year-olds, tonight he appeared exhausted, wearing every one of his 55 years. Despite his age and salt-and-pepper hair, her teammates all thought he was hot with his even features and muscular build, which was too gross to even contemplate.
"It's hard to explain, Dad."
She peered at the Newton's cradle on his desk, wondering if she'd ever seen the silver balls moving.
"What happened to your focus? You've been 100% scope-locked on the game since you dribbled your first ball. Hell, since you saw your first ball."
Chloe had been 5 when she'd watched the first women's Olympic soccer game on TV, and the entire course of her life had changed. Later, Dad would laughingly tell friends that she'd been glued to the screen like a dog watching bacon commercials. Instead of telling him, "I'd like to play that," or even, "That's what I'm going to do when I grow up," she'd informed him, "That's my sport." Unfortunately, she'd had no natural aptitude for the game, tripping over her own feet. But she hadn't let that get in her way. Dad had helped her train, ball-gophering over and over as she'd learned to punt, running with her to increase her dismal speed and endurance. She'd declared the sport her own, then followed up with nearly 2 decades of hard work to claim it. When Dad had spread out brochures for all the best colleges with soccer programs, she'd pointed out Stanford. "That's my school." When a women's professional team had come to Seattle, she'd said, "That's my team." Dad snagged another file.
"A lot of eyes were on that game. Your play tonight and your injury might have affected your invitation to tryouts."
Just for a shot at the Olympic roster, a potential had to be invited to the grueling 2-week training camp tryouts down in Florida. "I'll be healed by then."
It was next month. She had time to get fit. "I've never seen you choke like that. Ever."
She raised her chin.
"I pulled it out in the end."
She still didn't know how, but in the last 7 seconds of the game, she'd done a flying reverse kick to score the winning goal, landing on her back just as the ball shot past the keeper's fingertips. She'd been blinded by the camera flashes. All anyone's going to remember was that last score for the hat trick. She'd channeled freaking Pele to make that shot. It was an SI cover moment.
"I'll get my invitation, and then I'll claim my spot."
One of 22 players headed to Madrid.
"Well, I like your confidence at least."
Dad's phone buzzed.
"You'd think they could manage without me for one day."
"Yeah, one would think."
He checked the ID, declined the call. His phone immediately rang again, but he ignored it.
"Look, I know something's going on with you. Before I leave, I need you to tell me what it is. We don't keep secrets from each other."
"Don't we, Commander?"
When he took his pistol from his desk and holstered it, she wondered if his consulting job was ever dangerous. Wait. One thing would explain that mysterious conversation of his. With dawning realization, she breathed,
"You're a spy."
He'd been using code words. Lyke would mean insurgent or something.
"Why would you think this?"
he asked, sounding amused.
Shit.
She'd really been hoping he was a spy.
"Your hours? Your travel? Your evasiveness about your job? I don't really know what you do, and you always wear a gun."
"No, Chloe, I am not a spy. I'm just ex-mil. Have you been worrying about this? Is that what affected your play?"
"I heard a conversation of yours. It made no sense."
He paused his packing.
"And when was this?"
"I know this is going to sound crazy, but I heard you on the phone. During the game. I don't know how, but I did."
Instead of pointing out how ridiculous this was, he adjusted the framed picture sitting atop his desk with precise movements. She didn't know why he kept that photo of her mother there. Whenever he looked at it, his lips would thin with anger. Chloe figured some part of him must irrationally feel like Fury had abandoned him.
And what did you hear?
He said. You were talking to some guy, and the topic of discussion was a werewolf. He called you Commander. Dad narrowed his eyes. He would now tell her that she was crazy, having imagined all that.
Chloe, you've done one too many headers.
He cleared his throat.
Has anything else happened physically?
She reluctantly nodded, having no intention of telling him about her more embarrassing changes.
I've noticed you haven't been eating as much.
My appetite's totally off. Have to force myself to eat. I'm not sleeping more than a few hours a night, but I'm never tired.
I see.
With a dazed look on his face, he stood and crossed to his wall safe, placing his thumb on the sensor to unlock it.
I have to go out of town for a week, perhaps two, to service some international accounts.
He retrieved an aged book from inside.
While I'm gone, I want you to read this. Once you've finished it, we'll speak again.
When she'd gotten her period at 13, he'd given her a copy of The Care and Keeping of You. He'd been red-faced, gruffly saying,
Here, I'm sure you'll put all this together.
So what kind of life transition was she undergoing now? Instead of being red-faced, he was pale. He handed the tome to her. A chill took her, and the tiny hairs on her nape stood up. The Living Book of Lore?
What is this?
A slip of paper jutted from its edge, so she opened the book there. The pages were filled with archaic text, but the paper marking the spot was ruled, with her father's handwriting on it.
The Order will stop the abominations walking among humans. The Detris, those immortal creatures of darkness filled with untold malice toward mankind. Detris are a perversion of the natural order, spreading their deathless numbers uncontrollably, a foul plague upon man that must be eradicated through any means necessary. Capture them. Study them. Exterminate them.
Dad, I don't understand. Are you part of this order? Do you believe creatures of darkness exist?
Like werewolves? Had one of them made that animal roar?
This was so insane.
She flipped through the book, spying countless entries, all boogeymen and myths. Some she recognized, most she didn't. When his phone buzzed yet again, Dad collected his bag, still seeming dazed. Ex-mill and old school, her father was usually a master of self-control, he of the stiff upper lip. Dad simply didn't demonstrate raw emotions, yet right now, he looked like he'd been cold-cocked.
For 24 years I've debated with myself whether or not you would ever see this book. You're such a tomboy. Well, I'd really thought we were home free.
He placed his palm on her head, but when she looked up, he wouldn't meet her eyes.
Each blood test that came back, I held my breath. For so long, I believed.
My blood was tested for cancer. That's what you told me.
As if he couldn't hear her, he said,
Just know that you're my daughter. No matter what you are, I'll always love and protect you.
Then he turned toward the door.
Wait! You can't leave like this!
Book in hand, she hobbled after him, but he kept walking.
What am I? What's happening to me? Am I a Detris?
I'm not prepared to discuss this tonight.
His voice was shaky. She'd never heard him like this, had never seen Dustin Todd losing it.
I won't be, until I return.
If you think I'm a Detris, then what does that make you? Are you even my real father?
She demanded, though they had too much in common for him not to be. Over his shoulder, he said,
You know I am, Chloe.
Her eyes went wide.
Then you think Mom was one of those things?
Had his step faltered slightly.
There won't be more changes in you without a triggering event. Just hold tight. Stick to your normal routine. I'll be back soon.
He opened the front door. A tinted window sedan awaited him in the drive.
If for some reason I'm not back in 2 weeks, do not go to the authorities.
What is this? She cried. What's happening?
It's secret, and you must keep it that way.
She grabbed his arm.
Dad, I'm about to freak out here.
His brows drew together.
Are you scared?
With all his wilderness survival trips, shooting lessons, and self-defense camps, her fear response had been numbed. Staring down bigger players for almost 2 decades had nearly stamped it out. In fact, she had only one fear, an irrational one. Dating.
No, I just need to know, but I'm not scared.
After you read that book, I'll expect you to be.
He was truly going to leave her like this, leave her in turmoil.
Daddy, please!
Finally, he met her gaze, staring at her like he was memorizing her face.
Ah, Chloe, I really thought we were home free.
Four. Glenreal, the Lyke compound outside of New Orleans. Several weeks later. Will was asleep, knew he was, but he dreamed lifelike scenes, all his senses engaged. The sounds of screams in the Order's prison, the scent of death, the blood-curdling sight of 5 starving succubi stalking him through wards filled with fire and dismembered corpses. He wore a mystical collar that deadened his strength and speed to those of a mere mortal. And he was still weak from Dixon's experiments. But the succubi were desperate to feed. If they caught him, he wouldn't be able to defend himself like this. As he loped down winding corridors, he tore at the collar, even knowing it was indestructible. He prayed for his instinct to guide him. But since his capture, that comforting force had gone from quiet to silent. Losing one's instinct was like losing one's soul. The 5 drew closer, need making them swift. He took off in a sprint, felt like he was running through mud, so slow, so human. And still he was surprised that they caught him, stunned when numerous hands seized his limbs. With their unfettered strength, they threw him against the wall, bringing him to the ground. They easily shook off his blows, soon pinning him. In their frenzy to claw off his clothes, they tore at his flesh, bombarding him with their strew. They flailed atop him, their limbs tangled, their dresses smothering him like a shroud. He was suffocating, as if there were no air left on earth because only their scent remained. He fought them bitterly, but they were too frantic, too strong. Succubi coaxed and poisoned, never attacking. Yet these were mindless with hunger. Though their eyes glowed jade green, their gazes were vacant. And at that moment when he knew they would win, the strongest one looked exactly like Ruel. She gripped his face, murmuring down at him,
"Just look at you. Can you blame us, my love?"
His eyes shot open. He jerked upright from a spot on his bedroom floor and promptly vomited the whiskey he'd imbibed before passing out. A pair of fifths. What a waste. There he sat on the cold wooden floor, covered in sweat, shuddering next to a pool of his own sick. This should disgust him, the squalor of his suite should. But he was too far gone to care. He rubbed his palm over his bare chest, could still feel their claws ripping through his skin. Their scent lingered in his consciousness. This was his worst nightmare, and over the weeks since he'd escaped the Order, he'd had it whenever he slept. Another half-empty bottle on his desk called to him. He rose unsteadily, shuffling through the layer of clothes and trash covering his floor to reach it. Also calling to him? In the top drawer was his open-ended ticket to Hungary. There, hidden in a pocket of forest, was the lair of the Fire Dragon, a pit of unnatural flames hot enough to kill even a Lorian, otherwise known in the lore as Where Immortals Go to Die. For Will, no other option was as tempting. When Alike's instinct grew silent, it was time for him to take a bow. A pack was only as strong as its weakest member.
Me.
Will knew his brother sensed he wasn't long for this world. Monroe was out doggedly chasing down former Order prisoners, captives at the same time Will had been taken, to learn more about his brother's ordeal and help him beat it.
Fucking fixer.
Will had refused to talk about what had happened to him, saying only,
"The last 3 weeks ripped the scab off a festering wound."
For all these centuries, he'd been riddled with guilt and self-hatred. Now, he'd comprehended that only the hottest of flames could scour him clean. They'd fought about Monroe's leaving, coming to blows as they so often did. They were two alphas who'd never separated in 9 centuries. They fought routinely.
"Let me deal with this,"
Will had roared.
"I'll have my revenge, and then we'll put this to rest."
Monroe had roared back,
"I see you drinking every day, staring at nothing, lingering in your beast state longer and longer. My instinct tells me that you're dying. We're not just twins. We're cut from the same beast, and we've lived together for our entire lives. If you feel something, I feel it too, and this is bloody agonizing."
How could Will tell his twin that the only reason he'd fought to survive on that island was so he could mete out revenge and then die? Yet today, Will had accepted that there would be no revenge. His enemies were all out of reach in one way or another. He glanced at the ticket to Hungary, imagining the scouring purity of such a fire. If he couldn't have a clean life, he could seize a clean death. That was within reach. Suicide.
Just like da.
He lurched toward the bathroom. After rinsing his mouth, he drank water from the tap, then peered into the mirror at the same reflection he'd seen for nearly a millennium. His hair was more black than brown, and when he'd turned immortal, it had been chin length. He could cut it, but it would always grow out into that exact length, yet never longer. The stubble covering his broad jaw would never grow into a beard.
"This face is the ruination of me."
Ruel had told him his features looked as if they'd been carved by a sculptor, his golden eyes tinted by an imaginative painter. How he wished he could see the evidence of his continuous benders and hard living. Anything to alter his looks.
To not look like the Uyam McCreeve who'd gotten his family killed.
Will hated his own face, which meant he sometimes hated Monroe's. He scented his brother's return just then. Speak of the devil. Will had meant to be gone by the time Monroe returned. He crept to his bedroom's thick oak door. Even outside his room, the lodge reeked. Stale pizza and old beer. This home away from home was a proud 8-room hunting lodge, complementing the main Glenreal residence of Prince Gareth. Inside, it resembled a fraternity house on Sunday morning. Their 2 younger wards weren't the tidiest of males, either. He heard Monroe talking to them.
"You two ever heard of a broom? Mayhap a trash bag?"
Ronan, the youngest at 15, yawned as if he'd just woken up. It was 10 at night.
"I'm not cleaning if the others will not lift a finger. Face it, cousin. Headcase is not exactly a stellar role model."
Headcase? The blunt-spoken lad was a regular pain in Will's arse.
"What happened to the cleaning crew I hired?
Monroe asked.
He scared them off.
Will recalled that he'd been less than sober, his beast right on the edge. He heard the refrigerator door open, promptly close. Meager offerings? Ronan continued.
One of the girls tried to throw away a nearly empty bottle of whiskey. He roared, flashing his beast out there for all to see, not even trying to keep it down.
I did try. At least, a little.
The boy's older brother Bennett said,
He's only getting worse.
23-year-old Bennett was also known as Big Ben, a giant, even among Lyke. He was as quiet and unassuming as Ronan was, brash and mouthy. The two lads were fosters, Ronan because of his age, and Ben because he hadn't yet mastered the Lyke beast inside him. When the boys had lost the rest of their family 6 months ago, Ben had fairly much lost any control he'd once garnered. Will understood. Sometimes it was just easier to let the beast take over. Like a drug. Anytime he was under duress, it surfaced, raring to take the pain for him. He cast another glance at his plane ticket. It was one way, of course.
Where is he? Monroe asked.
Where he usually is these days. Passed out drunk,
Ronan seemed to delight in saying.
He has not left the lodge all week.
Nor the Glenreal compound, not a single time since his return from hell.
Not that I'm complaining about Headcase, Ronan said. I like this foster family. The level of supervision here clearly benefits us all.
Ben asked,
What did you learn on your trip? Aye, Monroe. What news?
Would he have learned all about the notoriously bloody prison break? All about the unspeakable things the mortals did to their captives?
It's as bad as the rumors milling around.
Ronan said,
He was vivisected?
Dissected while still conscious. Will's hand went to his chest, his claws digging into his skin. Some prisoners believe he was. Dr. Dixon, the Order's head surgeon, researcher, psychopath, customarily opened up her chosen victim, then removed all his or her organs, while the being was aware. A clammy sweat dotted his skin. Ben said,
How could humans have captured him in the first place?
They have advanced concealment techniques and weaponry. He was likely electrocuted, then collared with a band that controlled his strength.
Correct and correct. The humans had been clever, forcing each inmate into that mystical collar, a torque, to neutralize the immortal's abilities.
His beast could not overpower this? Ronan asked.
My beast could not rise.
The collar had prevented it for the weeks Will had been imprisoned, the longest he'd ever gone since Ruel. Monroe must have shaken his head in answer because Ben said,
There's more you're not telling us.
Monroe hesitated.
The prison break left all our allies there at a disadvantage, he said, hedging. Oh, aye. Monroe knows much.
In the melee that followed the escape, amid the chaos and fighting and explosions, some immortals had been able to remove their torques. The most evil ones. Like the succubi. Will's worst nightmare was indeed running through a hellish maze of fire and blood while a pack of ravenous seed feeders hunted him. Only it had happened. Except for Ruel's appearance, it had all happened. The bottle of whiskey shook when he turned it up. How hard he'd fought not to be gang-raped in full view of a throng of Lorians. Monroe finally answered.
Let's just say that Will has every right to be in his current state. Does not mean we're going to allow it any longer.
Allow it?
You should not even know about this, you nosy, self-righteous prick.
Ben said,
If he could just get revenge. He could beat this.
The ones responsible are out of our reach, Monroe said.
Utterly out of reach. Dixon had already been taken care of. Commander Webb, the mortal leading the Order, couldn't be located, not even by the most powerful witches, wizards, oracles, or sorcerai. Magister Chase, a.k.a. the Blademan, who'd run the prison, had changed sides, now protected by powerful Lorians. Nyx was untouchable. When Will had gone to call her out over shafting him, she'd nonchalantly reminded him that he'd vowed not to tell anyone about their meeting. When he'd accused her of working with Webb, she'd coolly replied,
"I use every means at my disposal to shape fate. The Order is a powerful shaping tool."
And then she'd told him why he couldn't exact vengeance against the Blademan.
"A very disturbing reason why." "I'm going to confront him with what I've learned," Monroe said. "If we come to blows, do not get between us, no matter what occurs."
The lads were still vulnerable to harm.
"Why do you not go for a run?"
Just as Will heard Monroe at the stairs, Ronan called,
"Probably bad timing and all, but I wanted to give you a yo concerning head case. Well, you were gone. I had some expenses I had to peg to his credit card. I put it right back into his wallet."
"That little prat came into my room and stole my card?"
At the thought of Ronan seeing him passed out, the back of Will's neck heated, which might have been a remnant of shame. Monroe called,
"Could give a shite, Ronan."
"Beauty!"
With each of his brother's steps, Will grew more enraged.
"Confront me, Monroe?"
His beast was rising. His claws sank into his palms. If Monroe cast him a pitying expression, he'd flay his brother. He'd whip his arse. Monroe entered. They shared a look between them. With an,
"Oh, you sodden self-righteous prick!"
Will attacked. 5.
"Someone's in the house with me."
Chloe's eyes shot open. She'd just awakened in her bed to the sense that she wasn't alone. Her hearing had leveled off at last. It was still revved up, but not insanely so. Yet she detected nothing unusual. Just the windstorm outside. Paranoia? Was the book getting to her? If someone had managed to break in... She sighed. After the last few weeks she'd had, she could almost feel sorry for the burglar. Her dad hadn't returned, hadn't contacted her or answered her numerous calls in more than a month. Yesterday, his number had been disconnected. Still, she didn't think he was actually in danger. He was capable, smart, and, with a gun at his side, deadly. Plus, he'd given her instructions in case he didn't return soon for a reason, because he'd been expecting, even planning not to. She felt in her bones that he was alive, which meant her emotions had vacillated from fear that he was in some kind of trouble to sadness that he might have abandoned her, to anger that he'd skipped out after leaving her with so many questions. She was pissed that he couldn't spare a single call to his only child.
"Hey, Pop, not only did I survive the Florida training camp, I'm going to be an Olympian. Thanks for calling in for an update."
Fear, sadness, anger. Rinse and repeat. Her emotions spun as wildly as a roulette wheel. She'd long since taken stock of her situation, trying to get a sense of her life, her overall field position. She'd come up with 3 truths. 1. Her dad was almost certainly part of that Order. 2. She'd told him she was changing, and he'd given her that living book of lore, an encyclopedia of myths, for a reason. He must believe she was one of those detritus that shouldn't be allowed to live. 3. He still loved her. She'd dutifully read every page of that book, perusing thousands of entries from Amazons and kobolds to witches and Valkyries. Did Chloe believe that yard gnomes, fairies, Shreks, and Edwards roamed the earth? Not quite. Believing in those creatures meant she had to believe in her own looming transition. You couldn't have one without the other. If they existed, then Dad wasn't crazy. If Dad wasn't crazy, then she was an undetonated detritus. So she'd decided to hold out on accepting an entirely new world for as long as possible. Still, for shits and giggles, she'd tried to match up her new symptoms to a species. No appetite? Maybe Valkyrie. Superhuman senses? Most of them. Supercharged sex drive? All of them. In the past, her libido had been so dormant that even countless hours watching RedTube.com couldn't spark it to life. Yet now she kept dreaming of a faceless man doing things to her. Wicked things. Sometimes he'd coax his erect penis between her lips, making her moan with satisfaction as she began to suck. Other times she'd feel the weight of his body pressing down on hers, his shaft sliding in and out of her until he treated her to the burning heat of his semen. She would wake up, throbbing with lust. Chloe had brought herself to come before now, of course, but her orgasms had been so lackluster, so, well, anticlimactic, that she'd wondered what all the hubbub was about. There was a reason she hadn't done more than kiss a boy. She'd never believed that overcoming her dread of dating was even worth it. Now, she was getting an idea about all the hubbub. She seemed to be developing a new sensibility toward men, an appreciation of them. When passing some guy on the street, a prominent Adam's apple or a wide jaw or developed chest would draw her eye. She'd caught herself checking out asses and assets. It was like her own sex drive was coming online for the first time, a process she'd come to think of as awakening. All she knew for certain was that the next chance she had to score with a halfway decent guy, she was taking it to the net. Her awakening wasn't the only change in her. She couldn't sleep more than 3 or 4 hours a night. Despite having zero appetite and barely eating, she hadn't lost an ounce of weight. In fact, her jeans were tighter. Even stranger, whenever she did manage to choke down a meal, the food seemed to stave off the awakening, blunting her sex drive. All her life, she'd controlled her training, her heart rate, the shape and condition of her body. Now, everything was beyond her, and the transformation seemed to be escalating. Over the last week since she'd returned from Florida, she'd stared at her mother's picture, trying to decide if Fury looked immortal. She'd agonized over that trigger Dad had spoken of. How to avoid something if she didn't know what it was? In 2 weeks, she was supposed to fly to Madrid for a last training camp with the finalized team before the games commenced. If she couldn't figure out what was happening to her, she feared she'd have to give up her spot. She felt like she'd go insane if she didn't get to talk to Dad. She played offense, not defense, and she was on something of a clock here. So she'd searched his office for clues, surprised by how many cabinets were locked. Finding nothing, Chloe had taken to driving the streets of her neighborhood, passing by his frequent haunts. She'd cruise through drizzle, hypnotized by the windshield wipers, feeling more lonely than she ever had before. At first, she'd attributed that pang in her chest to her transition, just another of her symptoms. But really, her loneliness arose from circumstance. She was used to being around a team of women, playing in front of fans, talking to her dad at least every other day. This solitude was gut-wrenching. There. Finally a sound. It was coming from Dad's study. Her eyes widened. He'd returned. Dashing out of bed, she hastened to her chest of drawers. She dragged on a pair of sweatpants over boy short panties and a baggy jersey over a cami bra. At her doorway, she paused. Just in case it wasn't Dad, she snagged her aluminum softball bat. Silently, she slipped down the stairs. At the door to his study, she took a deep breath, feeling silly about the bat. But she didn't put it down as she entered. A creature stood at the desk, rifling through Dad's belongings. It had to be 8 feet tall, wearing a cloak. Horns jutted up past the material of the hood. Horns? Though she hadn't made a sound, it glanced up, its face shaded. All she could see were two eyes. They were black as night, yet they seemed to glow. A creature from the book. The book was real. Or this was some kind of prank. Yes, a prank. Even faced with this sight, her mind resisted believing in the supernatural. It'd take anyone time to say, "Hey, scratch what I know. The world really was flat all along." The thing moved around the desk with lumbering steps, the claws of its bare feet scrabbling across the hardwood floor. Chloe's stomach clenched. "The world is flat. Shit!" She raised the bat. "Don't come closer, asshole!"
"Mighty,"
it grated, still stalking toward her. It sounded like an animal imitating human speech. She sensed she shouldn't run, feared it would just provoke this creature. "I said no closer!" When it kept coming, she took her at-bat, swinging for the goddamn stars. She connected with its shoulder. As if she'd hit a tree, the bat reverberated in her hands, sending pain up her arms. With a hiss, the thing seized the bat, crushing it like a soda can with its meaty hands. She screamed, sprinting all out for the front door. "Get outside, into the neighborhood, evacuate the house, evacuate!" Almost to the door, to the outside, to safety. She reached the front door and fumbled with the deadbolt. That thing was coming. She heard those claws. She gave a cry, cursing her clumsiness. "Finally, open! Consider this house motherfucking evacuated!" She took one step. The welcome mat was gone. The stoop was gone. She plummeted into an abyss. Six. Will had taken one look at Monroe's pitying expression and lunged for his brother, raining blows. Rage seethed. "Fucking hate pity. What the hell is wrong with you?" Monroe bellowed as he blocked hits. "You could not leave it alone. Had to dig and dig." All his shame laid bare. "If I'd wanted you to know, I'd have told you." His beast was rising to punish, and Will was about to let it out of its cage. "Calm yourself! I do not want to fight you!" "But you will!" Whipping his brother's arse was all that was left to him. Fangs bared, he snatched Monroe's neck in a chokehold, pounding his fist up into his face. "Damn you, Will! Why do you always go for the face?" When Monroe thrashed against him, grappling to get free, they tripped on refuse. Boots, food containers, bottles.
"Why do you always bloody pry? I needed to know the truth!"
Monroe wrenched free, throwing a fist like a sledgehammer, connecting with Will's nose. Bone shattered. Blood spurted. They faced off. In a thick voice, Will said,
"The truth?"
"Try this on for size. I am twisted. I am good and fucked up."
His instinct, quiet before his capture, was now silent. His beast had been uncontrollable during sex. Now it constantly prowled inside him, right at the edge of rising, a danger to everyone around. Will might have been able to tolerate normal torture. In fact, over the centuries, he had done so bravely. But those sick experiments and the succubi attack, everything had brought him full circle. Always back to Ruel. That bitch had hovered over him, harvesting his seed. Dixon had stood over him, harvesting his goddamned insides.
Oh, aye, Nix, she showed me my beaten heart.
With a roar, he barreled into Monroe, sending them hurtling through the doorway, across the landing, and over the banister. They plummeted into the great room below, landing atop the coffee table, demolishing it. Wood exploded from the impact. The brothers scrambled up, kept fighting.
Did they test weapons on you?
Punch. Counter.
Their sirens at unimaginable decibels.
Oh, aye! Things designed to take out my hearing, my senses!
There'd been a reason those mortals had gone undetected just before his capture.
Good bloody times!
With a sharp jab, Monroe tagged him in the kidney, a particularly painful spot for both of them. Only problem with fighting your twin, you both shared the same weaknesses.
Were you vivisected?
The word made Will flinch more than the punch had, so he launched another fist.
Chest cracked open, organs plucked, then stapled back up. The prisoners called it a zipper in the chest.
A big seeping Y from belly to collarbones. Something on the outside to keep you occupied while regenerating your insides.
This was done to you, Braher.
Brother. Now Monroe seethed.
And I cannot get vengeance!
No outlet to vent this rage. Will couldn't decide which of his four enemies he hated more. The soothsayer who'd betrayed him, the blademan who'd caged him, the scientist who'd tormented him, or the one who'd set it all in motion. Preston Webb. He lunged for Monroe again, pummeling his brother, pissed because he knew Monroe was holding back. His eyes had scarcely flickered, his beast as firmly leashed as usual. To hell with it. Will's knuckles stung. His face throbbed. At some point in the last 10 minutes, he'd begun to crave whiskey more than hitting Monroe. With a final half-hearted blow, Will released him. As quickly as the fight had started, he ended it. They were both breathing heavily. Both bloodied. At the same instant that Monroe swiped his sleeve over his lacerated forehead, Will did the same over his shattered nose. Then he turned toward the liquor cabinet to root for a fifth. Ah, Macallan. Fine whiskey. Expensive. He chugged it like water. The liquid stung his lips, swirling around temporarily loosened teeth. He couldn't quite taste it with his nose full of blood. But Monroe wouldn't let this drop.
And what about a doctor I heard tell of?
Will clenched the bottleneck so hard it broke, shards digging into his palm while the bottom half fell and shattered all over the floor.
She took a special interest in me.
Her eyes wide behind oversized glasses, she'd softly queried,
"Why should Chase be the only one with an immortal plaything?"
Will had made her pay, but too late. The experiments and torture had dredged up all his memories.
"I'd thought I was doing so well." "Do you know where Dixon is?"
Monroe asked.
"No one in Allure can find her." "I made sure she was conscious, as I ripped her limb from limb."
And he wished to the gods that he could do it again, leisurely. He dared his brother to say aught about that. Monroe didn't.
"Someone saw succubi tracking you through the prison."
To avoid Monroe's gaze, Will dug up another bottle.
"They wanted Lyke for dinner. As usual."
Ruel had been right. Werewolves were sodding catnip for those parasites. New bottle in hand, Will staggered back against the wall, overwhelmed by the memories. His hatred of succubi burned afresh until it choked him of breath, threatening to suffocate him.